This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Three appellate judges are going to read both briefs. They're not going to decide whether Richard Allen is guilty. That's not their job. Their job is to decide whether the trial that convicted him was constitutionally sound, whether the process met the standard this country requires. That's a narrower question than guilt or innocence. But in some ways, it's more uncomfortable because it forces the system to examine itself. A reply brief from Allen's defense is coming. Oral arguments are possible, and whatever these three judges decide will either close this chapter or blow it wide open. Bob Mata is with us to help break it down. Earlier in the conversation, if you go back to another segment or if you're watching the long one, you've just heard it. Bobby, we're saying that some of these points that have been made by the state are going to be dead in the water when it comes to the arguments back from the defense of Richard Allen. I want to talk more about that, and I want to talk more about, okay, they get another shot here at the apple. What are they going to be bringing to the table, and what do you think is going to be happening next from your point of view?
Well, the problem with appellate work is that they have page limits. Mm-hmm. So, because I think, T, when you and I were looking through the initial brief, we're like, God, why didn't they bring this up? Why didn't they bring that up? Why didn't they bring it? You know, and when you have those page limits, and they asked for an extension of pages, right? Mm-hmm. So they, in the court gave them that, but it was like, you have to pick and choose your battles, right? And the question, and so you're relying on the appellate counsel, and both Mark Lehman and Stacey Uliana are phenomenal Indiana appellate attorneys. Like they're as good as you can get in that state. And, you know, so you have faith that they went through everything and picked the things that they thought were the strongest things, you know. Again, I never want to be critical of other attorneys. You know, it's like, it's hard for me to do that. But when you select issues, when you had so many different things that you could have addressed that I thought were absolute Sixth Amendment issues that went right to the heart of what happened in this case. And you selected issues where, you know, or you should have known that there's going to be a waiver problem, meaning the defense didn't object to trial. It saddens me. So, you know, they're going to have the reply brief. And in the reply brief, it's exactly what it sounds like. You're replying to the state's arguments. It's not your opportunity to bring in all the things that you wish that you could have brought in or that you should have brought in your brief itself. So they're going to be somewhat limited there. And I hope against all hope that they're not going to try to get, you know, go to the appellate court on bended knee and say, look, you know, judges, the Constitution and fairness require you to give them a pass on the fact that they didn't object to trial, because that's a technicality. You know, they clearly had issues with this. They filed the requisite motions pre-trial. They clearly were denied hearings on these matters. And, you know, you can see that this is an issue that they were wanting to preserve for the appeal if he's convicted. And, you know, going it with hat in hand saying, you know, please, just from everything that Michael Osbrook tells me, and he's, I'll take his word to the bank every single day. They're not going to do it. They're going to say, nope, waived. So what that means to me is that issues 3 and 4, which are the Nupui issue, and the third issue, which gets into the evidentiary stuff and her barring it from coming in, is where they have to just lay waste. They have to just dig into that. I just prefer almost to see them concede, you know, like dedicate very little ink to those two top issues, because I think it's a non-starter. Mm-hmm. So in my estimation, where I'd like to see them just make hay is getting to those next two things, because I think that those are potentially Nupui / Glossop is the final issue there. And again, this harkens back to the motion to correct error. And like I said, Michael Osbrook's a pretty smart guy, and that's where this case, I think, can end up in a new trial. Like whether they're going to, I think that they're going to affirm on the first two just immediately. But I think three and four, you've got some ability to make some real ground with the appellate court there.
What kind of probability you give this, Bob?
Yeah.
I don't know. I rely on, you know, guys that, and gals that practice in Indiana for kind of like, I don't know, Michael's, you know, he's given it a, like I haven't asked him for a percentage, you know, and I say that because I rely on people that argue in that state.
Sure.
You know, these judges, because for me to say it, having never argued in front of any of those judges and not doing appellate work there is kind of fruitless for me to guess. But if they address the Napui Glossop issue fairly, he gets a new trial. So I mean that's
let me rephrase easier question on this. Do you think they're optimistic?
I think they're frankly more optimistic of it getting kicked up to the Indiana Supreme Court.
Is that the next step if this gets denied here?
Yeah, that's the next step.
So how does that look? What does that, you know, kind of roughly look like from a 10,000 foot level for a place we're not at yet?
So according to the people in the know from Indiana that do this for a living, they say that as to issues one and two, that assuming that the appellate court affirms on all count, and affirm means that they're agreeing with the state, they're affirming the conviction. All right. So that's what that word means. Mm-hmm. So if they affirm on all counts at that point, they apply to the Indiana Supreme Court. I forget what the exact term of art is for the document that they file with them, where they're saying, hey, we really need you to take a look at this thing. And I believe Michael said that they look at it fresh, as opposed to relying on what the appellate court looked at. So they're going to look at it with fresh eyes. And he says that out of the two, that the Indiana Supreme Court is going to be far more inclined to look at the merits, that they might be willing to look past the waiver issues and get to the heart of the issues. So that's kind of how that thing looks. And, you know, whether or not that's going to happen is obviously going to depend on whether or not they affirm on what I think are the two. I mean, the third issue is relating to the fact that they couldn't put on a defense. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to me, it's such a huge issue.
Yeah.
It literally barred them from being able to put on any kind of substantive defense. Like, and we're, you know, when she kept saying that there's no nexus, when you've got this guy saying that he spit on one of the girls and put, you know, sticks near her head, you know, like to make it look like antlers, and she's saying that there's no nexus when that person had no reason to know that sticks were left on the girls at all. Mm-hmm. In any way, shape, or form. If that's not somebody knowing about the facts of the crime, yeah. I don't know what is. Why is it, you know, when people are like, oh, well, that guy's got an IQ of a grapefruit. I don't give a shit.
Most people doing the shit do.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rob. Exactly.
How many times have you said this? People actually had IQ above Forrest Gump on this, they wouldn't be doing these kinds of things. There's zero EQ, emotional intelligence. IQs are always bottomed out. Everyone always thinks it's some big master scheme. No, these people are idiots.
There's not a lot of geniuses out there doing ritual killings in the woods, you know,
no.
And there's not a lot of even average intelligence people doing ritual killings in the woods. That takes a special type of stupid.
If you have average intelligence, you go out and get a job. You wouldn't have time to do this. You'd be actually doing something productive for society and yourself and your family.
You're not trying to please the Nordic gods?
People are so broken. Nutters, right?
Nutters. Yeah. It's I don't know, man. We'll see how it plays out. But
playing it even further ahead. We get to the Supreme Court level. Is that the end all? I mean, if they say no, we don't agree.
No. I mean, in terms of you know, kind of the appellate track. Yes, it ends it, but you know, you've got post-conviction world, which is
true.
Frankly, where I've always thought that this thing is going to land. To be honest with you, just because, and again, I'm basing that on what people tell me about the Indiana appellate court,
right.
You know, but it, like, I'll get different answers from two people I really, really respect, you know, that are doing the work over there, where one of them's a lot more optimistic than the other, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're really just guessing at this point, you know, again, I just really hope that the appellate court isn't going to like throw these two briefs in Claude and have it pump out an opinion and then basically say, oh, this looks pretty good. You know, we'll go with it. You know, it's like the case is too important. There's real lives at stake here. Yeah. And I want an honest intellectual opinion to be drafted where they do the work themselves to kind of look into it. Because I think, you know, when you have intelligent people looking at this case, I think that most people land on, you know, kind of the side where they're scratching their head and saying, how was this guy convicted? You know, and that's not to say that people that believe that guilt, you know, that Alan's guilty are not intelligent people. I mean, maybe they are. Maybe they just haven't looked into the facts of the case.
And, you know, and also they were limited to what they're allowed to be shown anyway. You know,
and it depends on who you listen to. You know, I mean, if you listen to Torch and Pitchfork people who think that everybody's guilty and that as soon as you're arrested, that, you know, we don't even need trials in this country. Well, you know, there's no convincing them of anything other than he's guilty. You know what I mean? They're not hearing. They're not willing to listen. They're not willing to critically look at something. And, you know, I mean, then that's fine. There's going to be people like that in this world. And there's plenty of them. You know, prosecutors rely on those people to get on the jury. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it certainly happened in my estimation in this case, you know, and I always respect a verdict. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but I respect it. You know, I mean, they sat there and, you know, we only had the opportunity to hear from one of them, but no. So that post-conviction work, T, is your quick answer. And essentially there, that's where you're bringing in newly discovered evidence. That's where you're going to see if there's any attacks on ineffective assistance of counsel. That's where you see it there, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, you know, after they read the brief, you know, from the state, they're like, oh man, the defense really screwed up here. Like, why didn't they bring up ineffective assistance of counsel like in the brief? And really the problem is that you're limited to the record on direct appeal, meaning things that were done or not done, you know, strategically by the defense or were missed. They're not on the record.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, that it wasn't raised on the record. So there's nowhere that the appellate court can go through the huge record and be like, I don't see it anywhere. So like that's where in post-conviction petitions, you're bringing up the things that should have been done, things that were done, that shouldn't have been done, you know, things that people that should have been called experts, all that stuff comes into post-conviction. And then you have the newly discovered evidence stuff. And, you know, I mean, here's the deal, man. Like, this is the reality. You've got victims' families out there that are feeling relief. You know, they have bought into what the state has sold them, that this is the right guy. They got the conviction on it, you know, and the thought of them having to go through it again is a nightmare. You know, it really is. And it's like, I feel great empathy for them. And
sure.
You know, but the reality is, if it's not the right guy, that ain't justice.
Exactly. There are feelings and there are facts, and they are two very different things. And just because if feelings are one thing, and yeah, I feel horrible for that. I cannot imagine being those families. But at the same point, it's not justice for your kids if you got the wrong guy. Even if it lets you sleep at night, if you're able to compartmentalize it so much and block out all of the noise, all the information that contradicts how the people that you trusted got there, the only thing you do is just kind of take some comfort in that you didn't get there. These people did, and they were wrong. That's not your fault they got there into that wrong of a way and dug you down there and kept telling you, we're right. We got the right guy. You were bamboozled by these fucks.
Yeah.
If you really want the right guy, take a look at the whole reality of this and let's figure out who the hell it is. They might already be dead, but let's at least get there.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like this thing's, if Alan gets a new trial, Or if they think, you know, because here's what would happen. If he gets a new trial, whether it be granted by the appellate court or the Indiana Supreme Court or post-conviction world, you know, down the road, and he's granted a new trial. But post-conviction is a very difficult way to go about it. Yeah. It's lengthy. You know, you've seen it in some recent cases. You've seen it in that Corn Rake Killer case with Todd Mullis, and then more recently with Zach Adams with the Holly Bobo case, both of which we've covered. I did abandon Mullis, so I don't want to hear it in the chat. I know I did. But, you know, it's a real, real tough road to hoe. It just is. Yeah. It's a lengthy battle. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you worry if he gets a new trial, and I believe that they would retry him, as stupid as that seems, but I think that they would do it because they're all in on it. And if he's acquitted, I sadly think that this is a case that is never going to get solved. And it could be, Tony, because of what you just said, that the actual killer is dead.
Yeah.
That's what I believe, but that's my opinion. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you on this. Share this. More people that are aware of this, the more pressure gets put on for this to go somewhere. So please do that. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries. Go check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Just search Defense Diaries. And Robin's new book, it is out. It's not all about me. It's available wherever you get books. Go check that out.
It's all about Bob.
Yeah. What about Bob?
What about Bob?
Baby steps. Baby steps.
Baby steps. All right.
Yeah. All right. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, for Bob, I'm Tony. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.